Hello everyone, and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with the leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, Content Manager at the Institute, and in this podcast we will be looking at news from the week beginning 9th of September. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Rod.
Our first story looks at the aims of OECD's B4IG Coalition. A coalition of 34 multinationals has joined forces with the Business for Inclusive Growth, led by the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development. In an announcement published in the run-up to the past weekend's G7 meeting in Biarritz, the OECD announced that the companies have committed to step up business action to advance human rights through their value chains, building inclusive workplaces and strengthen inclusion in their internal and external business ecosystems. In doing so, it noted, they will advance G7 government-led efforts to strengthen equality of opportunity, tackle regional disadvantages and fight gender discrimination. The B4IG Coalition is the first business-led initiative of its kind. Further members of the coalition include IKEA, Mars, Unilever and BNP Paribas. Kate, what should leaders learn from this new coalition's aims?
Since 1993, our companion Charles Hampden Turner and his partner, co-author Fons Trompenaars, have been talking to us about how many different sorts of capitalism there are and how there isn't just one that seeks to maximise shareholder wealth. And with all of these sort of initiatives, when you look at them, they make such sense that one wonders why they haven't been adopted years ago. In an ecosystem where you have a complicated supply chain with many stakeholders, if one profits at the expense of another, it's not so sustainable in the long term. And I think that's what they're saying. We've got to treat people fairly. We've got to treat our suppliers fairly. We've got to treat our customers with respect. And if we're not doing all of those things, something will break. And something is breaking. And these big names are obviously recognising the persuasive business case for running their businesses ethically.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story asks, what does CIPD executive pay data say about FTSE 100 priorities? Median CEO pay in the FTSE 100 is 117 times that of an average UK worker earning £29,600, according to a new analysis from CIPD and the High Pay Centre. That's despite median pay for CEOs in those 100 firms falling by 13% between 2017 and 2018. It would take a FTSE 100 CEO just 3 days to earn the annual pay of the average worker. CIPD CEO Peter Cheese said, "Fairness is one of the biggest challenges facing society today. The gulf between the pay at the top and the bottom ends of companies is slightly smaller this year, but it's still unacceptably wide and undermines public trust in business. We must question if CEOs are overly focused on financial measures and are being incentivized to keep share prices high rather than focusing on the long-term health of their business." Kate, what do these figures reveal about leadership priorities in FTSE 100 firms?
Well, it contrasts quite well with the previous piece where we're identifying that these big inequalities and disparities are being questioned. And I agree with Peter absolutely here. I don't think it's fair if somebody is earning hundreds of times more than what is essentially a colleague. And if you were able to justify, or could you justify indeed, why your wages are 200 or 300 times more than somebody else's, are you really adding that much more value to the business? I'd suggest not, because businesses, of course, are a collaboration of many, many different people putting in a huge amount of effort. And I think it's the ratio that really tells us how well you're regarded. Pay isn't everything, but it's a really strong message.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story looks at an article by Daniel Goleman on the Korn Ferry Institute website this week that looks at the concept of purpose and describes the sporting clothes maker Patagonia as a long-time poster child for purpose-driven business. He asks, what keeps this retailer thriving alongside competing brands like the North Face and retailers like Amazon, and argues that the secret to Patagonia's success is its purpose. The original mission of Patagonia is to build the best product, cause no unnecessary harm, use business to inspire and implement solutions to the environmental crisis. He argues that Patagonia has gone beyond words to action and actually commits 1% of its total sales to environmental groups. Kate, to what extent do you believe purpose should guide strategy?
It's not whether I believe it or not, really, in this case, is it? It's doing it. People who work for Patagonia know what it's about, know what they're trying to achieve, and are delivering a really successful business that's based on very sound ethical principles that are obviously shared. And again, you know, referring back to the previous two items we've been talking about, this is in action what all those companies are trying to say. Let's do no harm. Let's do no harm to the environment. Let's do no harm to the people who work for us. Let's do no harm to our suppliers. And if that's your guiding principle, you will get people gathering around it.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story looks at new research from Rotterdam School of Management, Erasmus University, and perhaps a quite controversial study that says diversity does not always improve performance, but instead usually causes a number of problems. The popular story is that diversity is great and wonderful, and it will lead to amazing results, but according to this research, more often than not, diversity creates more challenges. Dr. Maya Shalmer, Associate Professor of Organisational Behaviour, identified the key problems created by diversity that needed to be managed before the benefits can be seen. His research involved reviewing the findings from 20 years of research into diversity management practices. He found that people who are different from each other experience and perceive things differently, which makes it harder to work together as team members and will not understand everything in the same way. Also, trust and cooperation among team members tends to be low when diversity is very high. Dr. Shalmer says, we found that it's not enough to be diverse. We also have to manage how people view this diversity. Team members should feel part of one team working towards a common goal. People shouldn't simply be reduced to being representatives of their categories, such as male or female, but seen as unique individuals with beneficial qualities. Kate, what are the implications of this research for leadership?
Without wanting to be too critical about academic research, they really are stating the obvious with this. Of course, diversity means difference. It means competing paradigms. It means different ways of looking at the world. It means different lived experience. So there will be a degree of discomfort when all those different competing perspectives are put together. It's how you manage them and how you acknowledge difference that enables that new sort of thinking, the creative tension, the innovation that we know that diversity can contribute to. So put a group of people together in a room who are all different, there will be low levels of trust and there will be low levels of cooperation. But acknowledge that that's going to happen, ask those very same people how they are going to work together, and nothing actually works as well as success. If you start succeeding with the people that you work with, you start liking them, you start admiring them in spite of difference. And that's where we should be starting with this, rather than just commenting on how difference causes disagreements.
Thank you very much, Kate. Do you have anything to tell us about what is going on in the Institute this week before we conclude, Kate?
I just have to say, we're still so excited about International Leadership Week, and we're getting more and more speakers signing up. Latest one from Japan, insights from Brazil, from India, from the United States, from New Zealand. Please look out for the webpage. It's going to be live really soon. And start registering for these events, because we know they're going to be really popular.
Well, that's a wonderful positive note with which to conclude, Kate. Well, thank you very much indeed. And listeners can find further topical content in the news and views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thank you, Rod.